JC Corcoran Podcast.
Well, it's May, and that means high school graduation is right around the corner. But we want to make sure that another group of graduates are not forgotten. The people who earn their GED. Here with his own personal story of triumph on the general equivalency diploma is Mr. Jorge Rodriguez.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fallon. When I began to study for the GED, I was a father of four. My back had just gone out, and I lost my job at the post office. Nobody will hire me. Not UPS, not Federal Express, not DHL, not,
What, like Airborne Express?
Airborne Express. I couldn't even get a job delivering pizza. Not at Pizza Hut. Not at Domino's. Little Caesar. Not at,
Papa John's.
No, I didn't apply at Papa John's.
All right, John's. We got whatever. Just keep going.
So, anyway, I took the GED. And I failed it. I failed science. I failed math. I failed
English.
Yeah, I failed everything.
Okay, yep.
Then I got serious about it, and I took it again. But I failed it again. So I sat down, and I said to myself, get real. You gotta pass this test.
Yeah.
I got super serious, and I studied my head off. And I still failed. I still failed.
But you failed three times?
No, I failed five times. Then I said, I'm gonna take this thing one last time. And my friend Pepe told me that he passed by putting the letter C for every answer.
And then you passed.
No, my friend Pepe was wrong.
Why are you here?
I'm looking for Pepe. Anybody know Pepe? Anybody? Don't worry. Don't worry, Jimmy Fallon. I'm gonna get Pepe. Your ass is grass, and I'm the lawnmower. I'm the Toro. I'm the Honda. I'm the John Deere. I'm the Snapper. I'm
That's enough. Jorge Rodriguez, everyone.
Now I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before. It's like deja vu all over again.
Tuesday, April 26, 2022, 205 days remaining in our American democratic system as we have known it. You're at jconline.com. How you doing, kids? I would be JC. Well, what a ball game last night. I know the Cardinals ended up losing it, but still, it was one of the most remarkable games I've seen in a long time. It ended on a real clunker, but you can't really react that way. The Mets are in town. I was a little surprised to see so many empty seats. Now, I think they said that the attendance last night was 35,000, but they're obviously counting tickets that were sold, but people who didn't show up. And I understand. I mean, it's still early in the season, and the kids are still in school, and 55 degrees of game time is not exactly warm. Matter of fact, the new studio reporter for Fox Sports, not Fox Sports, Bally Sports, the blonde chick, I can't remember her name, but she's brand new, and she did a segment standing out on the field before the game last night, and she was shaking like a leaf. And I'm thinking to myself, is she nervous because this is probably the first on-field live shot she's done since she got to St. Louis. But it might have been a little combination of both, because it was chilly at the ball game last night. Anyhow, if you didn't watch the game, Scherzer and Michaelis both went seven innings, scoreless game. Now, a lot of people, and unfortunately, I was talking to the U-Man last night during the game, and I said, you know, you're seeing a hell of a ball game, and the problem is that what we're watching right now that we have so much deep appreciation for, and we're sitting on the edge of our chairs going, this is the greatest game. Look, this is amazing. But unfortunately, what you were seeing last night is exactly what the schmucks who are running Major League Baseball right now are trying to avoid, because they think the answer to solving the problems of Major League Baseball is just have a lot more scoring. They're trying to turn baseball into college basketball, and it's bullshit, because if you are a baseball fan and you didn't get a real electrical charge through your body watching that game last night, then something's wrong somewhere. There's a disconnect. But anyhow, we had the Major League debut of this Brendan Donovan, and he got on last night. Well, he got on because he was a pinch runner, but then he ended up scoring. He scored last night in his Major League debut, and then the eighth inning with all of that strategy, the kind of strategy we have less of now that we have the designated hitter in the National League. All that strategy in the eighth inning was fantastic. And all I can tell you is they do these drills in spring training every year. I still do them every year. When you're a pitcher and there's a ball hit to the right side of the infield, you head for first base because it's your job to cover first. And Gallegos got there late last night. It cost them the game. End of story. Game two of the series tonight. And we're going to get into the whole Mets or pond scum thing here in just a couple of minutes. But either way, what a game last night. So we have the Supreme Court is going to take this case, not about the outcome of last night's game. They're going to take this case about the football coach in Washington State. And he's a devout Christian. And so he thinks that God is watching the game. And either way, at the end of the game, he likes to go out to the 50-yard line and get on his knees and praise the Lord. And that itself wasn't that big a deal, but then the players started joining in, and then some of the fans went out there too, and some of the coaching staff. And then some of the players from the other team started joining in too. So now you got, like, you know, 70 people out there kneeling at the 50-yard line at the center of the field and doing this religious thing. Now, this is a high school. We've got separation of church and state when it comes to schools, especially that's part of the state part of the whole thing. And so the school board started getting complaints from people going, this isn't cool. They're not supposed to be able to do that out there. And the school board says, you're right. So it tells the coach, it says, look, you can do that, but do it in a more private area. By doing it out on the, you know, in the center of the field in full view of everybody, you're putting us into a difficult position because it's making it look like we are agreeing to this and we're not agreeing to it. So go ahead and do it. Do all the praying you want, but just don't do it at the 50-yard line. Coach says, fuck you. I'll do it wherever I want. And here comes the Supreme Court now. And all I can think of is, I was watching the story last night, is that when Colin Kaepernick did it on the sidelines, usually, not always, but usually by himself, maybe a couple of other players from time to time, but usually by himself, people started jumping up and down going, that's not cool. But you have an entire segment of the population thinking that what this football coach in Washington State is doing is just fine. Welcome to America. Okay, so if you are upset about this whole mask mandate thing, as we anticipate perhaps the arrival of a new variant, and you know, the airlines and public transportation said, we want you to wear your masks. And some people, and just remember that phrase, some people, said, we don't want to do that. And said, oh, here come the lawsuits again. And it's interesting, by the way, in all of the polls, and I'm talking about the legitimate polls, it's a plurality. I mean, 56, the one I saw said 56% of the American people who were polled on this thing favored mask mandates in public places like airports and on buses and trains and airplanes. Only 24% of people oppose this whole thing. But again, here come the courts. Here come the lawyers. And there's a great story. I'll have to try to put this on my Facebook page, the Showgram with J.C. Corcoran, that apparently it came down to four people, including a woman in the Tampa area who said that she had some sort of medical condition where if she wore a mask, she experienced anxiety. And then a former Wall Street analyst living in Idaho who had founded an anti-COVID regulation nonprofit. And, of course, the Trump-appointed federal judge who the American Bar Association said was too inexperienced to be appointed to the bench. This is how we ended up in the situation we're in now, where it is not mandatory that you wear a mask on an airplane, planes, trains, automobiles. Well, automobiles, that's up to you. Although it is funny, every once in a while you will see somebody riding down the highway in a car by themselves wearing a mask. And somebody said to me, why would anybody do that? I said, I don't know, maybe they're ugly. Good morning, everybody. But, you know, we're supposed to be living in a democracy, and that means it's the will of the people, which means majorities. But I don't know, somehow we have majorities, whether it's abortion or gun rights or any of that stuff. All of the polls, you know, this is the NRA poll. The NRA poll says something like 80% of NRA members want stricter background checks. And I think that's very cool, by the way. I have friends who have guns and go shooting and hunting and all that sort of stuff, recreational stuff. It just isn't my thing. It's like, modern interpretive dance. You know, I know it's very artistic and some people just love it. Not for me. But I'm not going to try to stop you from going. I just don't understand this business that's going on. It seems to have started with the Christian right, where they're like, it's not just good enough that we go to church and that we have these set of beliefs. You have to believe it, too. That's where we get into trouble, everyone. Anyhow, it could be China. They did stories on this over the weekend where they chase you into your apartment building and then they put up a 10-foot fence around your apartment building so you can't get out. That's a fun country, huh? It's like Frank Zappa told me once in an interview about his feelings about China. Same little suit, same little bicycle. And may we remind you that surgeons in this country and around the world every day perform surgical procedures on patients and everybody wears a mask. Sometimes these operations, you hear these operations sometimes being like 16, 18 hours to reattach a severed hand or something. But, you know, even if you go in for a simple procedure, it's going to be an hour or two usually. All the surgeons, the anesthesiologist, everybody in that room while you're being cut open and fixed is wearing a mask for a long time, and it doesn't seem to hurt any of them. So all this nonsense about, I have a medical condition, my doctor's, look that up. Just Google that story. Google that story. You will not find any reputable doctor who will agree to the idea that somehow I'm breathing my own carbon dioxide. There ain't a lick of truth to any of that stuff. Just nothing. There's nothing to it. I don't like wearing a mask. I hate it. But I've made it so far without getting COVID, and I have convinced myself that, nobody in my family had it either. So I've convinced myself that I don't need to get this. Then when you hear about those long haulers, that's the scary stuff. That's really the scary stuff, where some people will never actually get back to normal. Here on the podcast, we only do politics when it is absolutely unavoidable, and this is one of those cases for the next moment or two here. Over 2,000 texts between Mark Meadows and half of the Republican Party obtained by CNN yesterday. Marjorie Taylor Greene was the first person to call Mark Meadows and say, you got to tell Don to get these people out of here. How about that, Marjorie Taylor Greene? But then later on, she said, oh, well, what about some martial law? Why doesn't he just declare martial law? Let's do it that way. And it's funny. In her testimony the other day, she claimed to not remember texting Mark Meadows about invoking martial law. I don't remember.
I do not remember.
How about Representative Gosar?
I'm sorry, I don't remember.
Did anyone ever mention to you the possibility that there might be violence in Washington?
I don't remember.
Ms. Green, this is a tweet that you sent out on January 2nd, 2021, correct?
I'm not sure.
Okay, you don't recall this?
I don't recall tweeting that, no.
Did you advocate to President Trump to impose martial law as a way to remain in power?
I don't recall.
You don't recall if you wanted to impose martial law? You don't? Wow! I wish I had Marjorie Taylor Greene's memory. Yeah, I once said, enjoy your dinner to a waiter in 2003. And I still think about it every day. Every day. Enjoy your dinner. You enjoy your dinner. Kill me!
I don't usually watch Trevor Noah. For some reason, I watched it last night, and that was funny. God. So it looks like we're still going to be arguing about this for a while. First time I ever saw Bowen Yang on Saturday Night Live, I went on Facebook and I said, there's a new star. This guy is going to have it all. This guy, a couple of years from now, will be one of the most famous comedic actors there is. Bowen Yang from Saturday Night Live. He stars in the new romantic comedy Fire Island that's coming to Hulu on June 3rd. I hope he's got somebody managing his career properly, because if they do it right, everybody is going to know this guy. Stevie Nicks going out on tour. What is she now, about 73? How old is Stevie Nicks?
Stevie Nicks is 73 years old.
Bingo. Damn, I'm good. Now, they'll probably add more dates, but as it stands right now, the closest she's coming to St. Louis is at the Bonnaroo Music Festival, June 19th. That's in Manchester, Tennessee. Noblesville, Indiana, at the Roof Music Center on June 21st. I don't know how you pronounce that. Jemima Kirk from Girls, 37 today. Channing Tatum, 42. Magic Mike. Melania Trump, 52. Kevin James. Paul Blart Mall Cop, 57. Carol Burnett today is 89.
The A-List interview with JC and the Morning Show Graham.
Carol Burnett on the early days of her award-winning comedy variety series.
Then at that time, Dean Martin was on, and Flip Wilson, and the Smothers Brothers.
So it was a little less dramatic when you put on the dress, right?
This is correct. I remember they tried to talk me out of it, though, because they said no woman had ever done a successful comedy variety show. But we hung in there, and we did it. And I see more comedians, comic actors coming up again now, and I think the pendulum will swing back. You know, you went through the doctor shows, you went through the soap operas. Now there's a plethora of situation comedies, and I believe whether it's the next thing in line or down the line will be more variety shows. Why not? It's show business, it's entertainment, and I would love to see them come back.
You are so well liked and so revered among the show business community.
Thank you.
And it seems as though the American public feels the same way. When people approach you on the street, what do they ask you? What do they say to you?
Usually they don't approach me because they don't notice me. I mean, if I looked like Dolly Parton and I were walking down the street, they'd turn their heads, you know. So usually if I go into a store and I don't say much, people don't look. If I talk, my voice is recognizable. Then if they recognize me, they usually ask me to do the Tarzan yell. Or they ask me, why do I pull my ear? Or they say, is Tim Conway really that funny? You know, just things like that.
Carol Burnett, thanks so much.
Thanks, JC.
I'll tell you, when you're a little kid on the southwest side of Chicago next to Midway Airport and you're watching Carol Burnett on the old Gary Moore show or on the Carol Burnett, comedy variety show, you never think you're going to be actually speaking to her. Every once in a while, I hear one of those things and I have to pinch myself. Sometimes I still can't believe it's me. 45 years ago, 1977, Studio 54 opened its naughty doors behind that stupid velvet rope. And I'll tell you this, there's some stuff that's been floating around on the internet lately about just what it was like there. And as much debauchery as you thought was going on in sinister activity, trust me, after you read this thing, it was far worse than we thought. 36 years ago today, 1986, Arnold Schwarzenegger married Maria Shriver. They lived happily. And 36 years ago today, 1986, the worst nuclear reactor disaster of the 20th century occurred at Chernobyl. And it wasn't the Chernobyl thing. It was actually in the late 70s when Three Mile Island went. And Saturday Night Live, as they have done so many times over the years, sort of diffused the situation. There was a lot of anxiety. A lot of people were really scared about what had happened in these nuclear disasters. But it was like 78 when I think it was when Three Mile Island happened. And Saturday Night brought out Rodney Dangerfield because Jimmy Carter had been exposed to the radiation and he turned into a giant. Like, how big is the president? Like, it was like Jane Curtin was pretending to hold a press conference, and they're like, you know, well, how big is the president? Like, well, we brought in comedian Rodney Dangerfield to explain, and the actual Rodney Dangerfield comes out. They're like, you know, how big is the president? I'll tell you, the president's so big right now, two women could make love to him at the same time and never meet. I'll tell you. Saturday, I did that after the Persian Gulf War, too. They did a Wayne's World thing that where it just was like, and all the steam came out of the situation, and it sort of eased everybody's mind because you were watching, well, they're making fun of it, so how bad can it be? I don't mean to be mean when I say this, but there's too much fucking Steve Harvey out there. You know, I have a very good friend who used to work with him every day. Steve Harvey used to do morning radio in Chicago at a radio station called WGCI. And a really good friend of mine was his engineer. He ran the controls and sort of helped out on the show. And Steve Harvey treated him very, very well. Now you start hearing interviews with Steve Harvey, and he is like he's a caveman. His views on pretty much everything are from like the 1940s. And I don't begrudge him because he has figured out how to be one of the wealthiest people in entertainment. Every once in a while, it's getting like Friends, where you turn on the TV and somehow Steve Harvey is just always there doing something. Because you have the original runs of Family Feud, the reruns, the current shows, the whole thing, and they're all running at the same time. You're channel surfing, and it's like, well, here's Steve Harvey, here's Steve Harvey. He's got now he's a judge. He's wrapping up season one of his judge thing tonight in prime time. But he does a nice job on Family Feud. It's a dumb show, you know. They're doing with that show now what they used to do with the Match Game. Every question is sort of semi-naughty. Some of them are just blatantly naughty. But there is some actual entertainment value in watching people who are not used to being on TV and not being in front of a television audience with cameras and lights, and there's fucking Steve Harvey standing next to you and you're nervous, and now somebody says, okay, 25 seconds on the clock, and you're like, sort of watch that stuff to see how just average, normal, everyday people adapt to a high-pressure situation like that, because on occasion, as you know, they will say something incredibly stupid.
We asked 100 women, on a scale of 1 to 10, how luscious are your lips?
8.
Name an animal that should not be someone's pet.
A lion.
Name something in your house that could break down at any moment.
Coffee machine.
Name someone who tells you the things you want to hear.
Your mom.
Name something people use instead of dental floss.
Rope.
Just the visual image that your brain conjures up of somebody trying to floss with rope. Oh, God. I've often said this. You know, Dan Rather wrote a book called The Camera Never Blinks. It's true. I've said this for years. The easiest thing in the world to do is to look bad on television. You break concentration for a billionth of a second, and suddenly you're a YouTube sensation for all the wrong reasons. All right, what else we got here? Why am I asking you? I'm the one doing the show. All right. Oh, there was another reason to hate the ball game last night, even though it was a spectacular game we ended up losing in like the worst possible way. The other problem is, and I've been talking about this, is these announcers, paid announcers, big time, you know, stuff. Danny Mac, who I like. You know, Dan McLaughlin, I like all these guys. I see him in the press box, and, you know, we always have a nice exchange. I'll tell him a little joke or ask him a question about something. But we know that Mike Shannon used to butcher names all the time. And I think people thought when Mike Shannon was retired, which he is now, that that was the end of that. And it's not. Mike Claiborne, again, I like Mike. See him all the time. We always have a nice, pleasant exchange. But a couple of years ago on the ball games, he started pronouncing, and this is a big sponsor, and that's Purina. And Claiborne just refuses to pronounce it the way it's supposed to be pronounced, which is Purina, like pure. Things are pure as the driven snow. Purina. He says Purina. It's not Purina. Well, apparently mispronunciations are like COVID because it is spreading through the press box.
Saturday, April 30th, Cardinals and Diamondbacks. Thanks to Perina, the Nolan Arenado bobblehead.
Now he's doing it. It's not Perina. It's Purina.
Thanks to Purina.
No!
Purina.
I'm changing the subject before my fucking head explodes here. All right. It was on this date back in 1990 that we left for the former Soviet Union. We went and broadcast from Russia, Moscow, the former Soviet Union, 32 years ago today. My God. You know, communism had fallen. The Berlin Wall came down. There was about an 18-month period there where you could go in and out of the former Soviet Union fairly freely. We knew we were being followed most of the time. We understood that. But we went running around the city, interviewing people, just talking to strangers and the Russian people. And I know it's sort of hard to think of it in these terms right now because of what's going on between Russia and Ukraine. But, you know, they don't know. They're not being told the truth about what's going on. And when you go over there, you find out Russians are about the same as we are, and that you realize, you know, there's always talk about indoctrination. Well, we've been indoctrinated, and so have they. I'm a child of the 60s. We had to go through the whole, you know, bomb shelter thing and the nuclear alerts and all that business and the Cold War. And then you realize when you go over there, this is all the Kremlin versus the White House. This has got nothing to do with the people. The people are about as much like us as you could imagine. But it is interesting because we made our announcement that we were going over there. And then, like, the next day, KMOX made the announcement that they were going, too. It's like, haha, we beat you. So then we announced the date that we were going to be broadcasting live. And again, what happened was you turn on your radio at 6 a.m. There we are doing the entire show from the former Soviet Union. So the day before we did that, KMOX had Bob Hardy on the phone from the former Soviet Union. And so they still tried to claim, and by the way, the local media, the dopes at the Post-Dispatch included, you know, still give credit to KMOX for the first live broadcast from Russia. And it's bullshit. It was bullshit then. It's bullshit now. Talking to somebody on the phone from Moscow is not the same as doing an entire produced show with interviews and guests and all stuff like that, which KMOX did not have until after we had our first show on the air. But, you know, I've come to expect that somebody's always trying to tell stories in St. Louis the way they wish the story was rather than the way it actually occurred. We're walking the dog last night and my 12-year-old says to me, "So whose side are you on in the Johnny versus Amber trial?" I looked at her like, "Where are you hearing about that?" And I told her what I really think, and that is, I think there's plenty of blame on both sides. I don't see any winners coming out of this. "She stole my hat." "No, I didn't." "She stole my hat." "No, I didn't." It's like Shailene Woodley and Aaron Rodgers might have finally broken up for real this time. Late night tonight, Elizabeth Moss, who used to be married to Fred Armisen from Saturday Night Live, and she does not have nice things to say about him. She's on Jimmy Fallon tonight. Kimmel's got Randy Rainbow. Colbert still out with COVID. James Corden has Ray Romano and Brooklyn Decker. That's not a bad show. And Oscar Isaac is on with Seth Meyers. David Spade, Nothing Personal, stand-up special tonight, starting on Netflix. Sting says a band is like a teenage gang and doesn't allow you to evolve. Here's the quote: "As much as I love the Rolling Stones and AC/DC, it's hard to see growth in their music." End quote. Sting, by the way, left the Police. He was only 32. One of my favorite stories involves little Lea Michele, who everybody used to be on Glee, and pretty much everybody who was around insists that she was an absolute nightmare to work with. So it turns out she has a gay friend, and they did a Broadway show together. And apparently, and this is her telling the story, her friend, her gay friend, was so curious about the female anatomy that she just basically got up on a chair and lifted her skirt and showed him what was in there in, shall we say, detail. It almost sounds gynecological in nature. And here's one to straighten you up on a Tuesday morning. Ralph Macchio is now 60 years old. That places him 8 years older than Pat Morita was when he played Mr. Miyagi in The Karate Kid. Morita was 52 When the original movie came out, he passed away in 2005 at the age of 73. But Ralph Macchio, now older than Mr. Miyagi when they shot The Karate Kid. And the story that won't go away, you'll still be pummeled with this thing all day today. Elon Musk buying Twitter for $44 billion, while the guy who invented MySpace was seen at the dollar store buying ramen noodles. And with that, the J.C. Corcoran podcast for Tuesday, April 26, 2022, is in the can. 205 days remaining in our American democratic system as we have known it. We are here every weekday morning just after 7 o'clock. If you miss a podcast, don't worry. Everything is archived. You can email me, JC at JCOnTheLine.com. Facebook, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. As we said, we only do politics when it is absolutely unavoidable. You have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.